solar panels work in winter. Solar energy output in Australia throughout winter is surprisingly high in some cities. You can learn more about better solar energy at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar to learn more. GLG Greenlife Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. Welcome to the First Serve, your home of tennis.
It is a very warm welcome, everybody, on this Monday, the 9th of May, another edition of The First Serve, talking at the world of tennis. We love doing it every week, right throughout the year. Your calls tonight, 1300 736 736. They are always welcome. Your texts on 0433 98 1116, all thanks to our good friends at Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, magnificent prices, free delivery if you order over $150. So you can go and shop while you're listening tonight, tennisdirect.com.au. Get that nice little 10% discount store-wide. Use the code FIRSTSERVE10. All the goodies delivered to your front door. On the B-Solar menu tonight, the hottest show in tennis. And we circle back to Tennis Australia and the topic of UTR. But I think, even if you're in the car, I want you to get out now and rise for the King of Spain.
Carlos Alcaraz is the champion in Madrid. The 19-year-old caps off the perfect week with a third top four win here in the Spanish capital. It's a second title at this level in the space of 6 weeks. An hour of total domination.
Total domination indeed. Is there anything this young man cannot do? It is the hottest story in tennis, from 120 in the world to world number six in the space of 12 months. Now, I had a lot of texts coming in last week, Brett. You know, you almost, you know, chins on the floor, you know, dribbling all over Carlos Alcaraz. But this guy is just phenomenal. And he has had the greatest week of his tennis life. When you knock over your idol, who's been the king of clay for the best part of two decades, you knock over the world number one, you knock over the world number three, it is astonishing what he has done. The youngest five-time finalist on tour since Rafa, claimed seven, if you don't mind, by the age of 19, back in 2004, 2005. Up to world number six, second Masters 1000 title of the year, seventh straight top 10 win, tour leading fourth title of the year. The most match wins for Carlos, 28. It is a great story. You heard the voice there of Nick Lester in commentary. He's been good enough to join us off the top of the show tonight. Nick, what more can we say? This is an incredible story.
Pretty decent CV that, Brett, isn't it? You were just reeling off there. I thought you were going to keep going for a while because
there's more.
It's never ending, isn't it? It's never ending. I mean, you know, it's, what can you say? It's remarkable. It's the maturity, Brett, I think. There's so many aspects to his tennis, but it's the physical maturity, the emotional maturity that he has that stands out for me. You know, we talked for so long over the last decade about how teenagers can't do it anymore. They can't make the breakthrough. They're not physically able to. Those days are gone. This sport has become too physical. And yet here's a guy who has transformed himself physically over the last 6 months to be able to compete with these guys, and not only compete with them, but then go on and beat them. And you know, I hate to throw around stereotypes and cliches, but you looked at that match against Djokovic, and yes, Djokovic played well, but it was a part of you that almost kind of felt like, you know what, this sport has moved on a little bit here again. Yeah. And I didn't think we'd say that, and it's incredible.
His own quote, Nick, I'm 19 years old, which I think is the key to be able to play long and tough matches in a row. I'm feeling great physically. We go back to Barcelona a week ago when he beat our very own Alex de Minaur in about 3.5 hours, comes out a few hours later and beats Pablo Carreño Busta pretty comfortably. I mean, you can almost play five matches in a day. I mean, he doesn't ever look spent.
No, you're right. And I have to say, I thought emotionally yesterday he might come out and suffer a little bit. Yes, it was a final, of course, which has its extra emotions. But after everything he'd been through on the Friday and the Saturday in that 48-hour period, I did wonder whether he would come out a little flat. But, of course, it was the opposition that actually did that. And Zverev coming out and criticising the ATP for their scheduling, that's understandable to an extent. But, Yeah, just remarkable. I think it's the boldness, Brett, as well. It's the way he plays the big points that's so incredible. You know, his belief in his own game, the ability to pull off the serve and volley on a big point when you don't think it's coming. You know, you've seen everything else, and then he's down 30-40. He comes in, he has such a good understanding of when to play the right play at the right time. And obviously, it's the right play at the right time when he wins the point. But, you know, he just seems to have such clarity of thought and just inner steel. And I think you've got to put a lot of credit down to the people he's worked with. He's got a massive team, Brett, behind him. You know, from a young age, they have built this incredible group of people, physical trainers, psychologists, doctors. And I think Juan Carlos Ferreira obviously has to have a big, take a lot of credit for that.
They've got an incredible bond. You can see that. It's sort of like the older brother. It's a little bit of the fatherly figure and someone who's played the game at the highest level and achieved incredible things. So what an ear to have Juan Carlos Ferreira. Do you think right now, Nick, he is ready to win a Grand Slam right now?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely, I do. I honestly do. I don't think there's any reason to suggest otherwise. We can obviously look at the five sets and talk about how five sets is going to be impactful for him, but he's playing at a level where, to be honest, you can see the early couple of rounds, if the draw is relatively kind, he's not going to be exerting himself too much because he's that good. So he is a cut above so many of the opposition. So I don't see any reason, Brett, why he can't win Roland Garros. I really don't. I genuinely don't. I think, you know, obviously experience at a major might come into play. He doesn't have that at a major. How you manage the 2 weeks, that is going to be different. But I tell you what, he's proved everyone else that experience doesn't count for a whole lot, because right now he's tearing up not just the tennis world sport, but you know, Brett, but I think the sporting world as well. And we're so fortunate to have this young man around.
Incredible sporting story. Nick, before I let you go, give me a word on Djokovic and Nadal and just how you're viewing them up close right now. So Rafa comes back after a few weeks out with the rib. Novak, obviously, the delayed start to his year. He hasn't played the volume of tennis that he normally has going into the second major of the year.
I thought I was very impressed with Djokovic, I've got to say. I thought that was the best week he's had for a while. Clearly undercooked coming in. Belgrade obviously helped him a lot as well, Brett. He got a lot of tennis in Belgrade. You know, a lot of three-set matches there. The match against Alcaraz, there were 3 points in it, Brett, in the course of 3.5 hours. So that gives you an idea how close he is. So I think Djokovic is definitely trending in the right direction. I think there's a lot of positives for him. Another big week here, though. We know he's played well in Rome. So I think if he can win in Rome, he'll be right where he wants to be going into Roland Garros. Rafa, you don't rule the guy out, do you? We've been there before. We've done that one before. We've been burnt on that one. So I'm not ruling that guy out in any way, shape or form, especially going into Paris.
No doubt about it. The greatest competitor we've probably seen in the history of tennis. Thank you, Nick. Let's talk during the French. I just wanted to get your take. You're on the ground there in Madrid. It must have been some sort of atmosphere. The Spanish crowd were in full voice. So we'll talk in a couple of weeks and enjoy Rome this week.
Thanks, Brett.
Nick Lester, one of the best tennis commentators going around. So 120-6 in the world in the last 12 months. Incredible. You can share your thoughts. 1-300-736-736 or on the text 0433-981116. So for Alex de Minaur, defeated Pedro Martinez in the first round, lost to Sinner for a fourth time. He was certainly outplayed. That's the challenge for Alex. I mean, here he is on the cusp of the top 20 again, trying to take one of these biggest scalps. Sinner is certainly that touch better. Plenty for Alex to ponder. He's got Dusan Lajovic, I think, in the early hours of tomorrow morning, first round at the Italian Open in Rome. And then I think it's a little bit of an easier. It might be Ramos Vinolas or Tommy Paul in the second round. So not having to play necessarily one of the big guns. Let's hope he can go on a little bit of a roll, Alex, in Rome. Kulov and Skupski took out the doubles in Madrid. Ons Jabeur, this is one of the great stories in tennis, and she won in Madrid as well, did Ons.
And the trailblazer from Tunisia is the tournament titan as things have gotten real in Madrid for Ons Jabeur, champion of a WTA 1000 event.
We'll get to Harry and Belmore in just a tick, who's got on the line because he missed us last week, Ons Jabeur. I mean, I just love the story. Shane Leonard, he's based here in Melbourne, who's a data analyst, the first Arab North African player to win a WTA 1000, up to 7 in the rankings. Nick talked about, you know, a lot of players now having a sports psychologist. Ons has certainly got one of those. Paolini, Gracia, Bencic, Halep, Alexandrova, and then beating Jessica Pegula in 3 to win the tournament. So well done to Ons Jabeur, who's just great to watch. We love watching Ash Barty for so long. We love any player with a point of difference. Beautiful court craft, plays every shot in the book, and it's not all firepower. There are many ways, as we know, certainly to win a tennis match. So that has been the major highlight of the tour in the last week. Of course, Madrid, plenty going on the Challenger Tour. There's a full wrap on our website, thefirstserve.com.au, so you can check that out. We had a couple of Aussies last night. I was watching the streams, Lee Tu and Tristan Schoolcote, who were runner-up at their respective ITF events. Obviously, Lee Tu's on my watch list, just how far he possibly can go. What a story he's been through UTRs, ITF, getting a look at Grand Slam level. Coming back after 5 years out of the sport, so he's going to step up to the challenges in the next couple of weeks, and Schoolcote made the final. We had Alana Parnaby, Akira Sandilan, and Tristan Schoolcote, who all won doubles titles across the weekend. So anytime you're a winner, whatever level of the tour, it is certainly a mighty achievement. Harry in Belmore, welcome back to the show, H.
Hello, Brett. The juniors that came out here in the 80s, about 84, LeConte,
yes,
in his first Australian Open, had McEnroe down 2 sets to love. I saw the match. He hit so many winners that the third, fourth and fifth, they failed him. He was the shots that were going in by an inch were missing by an inch.
Yes.
That was Henry. Darren Cale got to the semi-final of the US Open.
Mm-hmm.
After tennis, he owned 2 pubs. He done all right. Wally Masur got to the semi-final of the US Open and done very well. Jason Stoltenberg got the semi-final at Wimbledon. He beat Goran in the quarters. Goran came off the court and said, "I played like a faggot." And they fined him for a sexist remark. Woodbridge got to the semi-final. He done well after
right. He
got out.
Indeed.
Peter Doohan,
yes,
who was there, called Todd a spoiled brat.
I tell you what, Harry, you've gone down memory lane for me beautifully there. Started with Henri LeConte and reeling off some great Aussies there who have had some fine success over the years, H. It's always great to have you on the show. I do need to mention before we break, Australia clinching their second World Team Cup Junior title on Sunday, earning a 2-1 victory over top seeds Great Britain at the ITF flagship wheelchair tennis team event, which was over in Portugal. 16-year-old Riley Dumsdale, who I've spoken to on this show, or certainly at an event, I think at Kooyong about 3 or 4 years ago, who's also a member of the Australian team that beat Great Britain in the 2019 final in Israel. He earned the early lead for his team. And then it was, of course, he and the young boy, Salim Nasser, who won the double 6-1, 6-1 to clinch that 2-1. So well done to Australia. We'll follow up Riley and maybe get him on the show in the next couple of weeks. So we're here thanks to AATC, Australasian Academy of Tennis Coaches, providing quality coach education across the globe. Courses delivered by industry leaders and tennis business owners. Learn locally, coach globally, internationally endorsed, inquire and enrol at AATC.tennis. We're going to talk some UTR coming up next on The First Serve.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Always great to have your company on a Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair talking the world of tennis. Plenty of Aussies around the globe this week. We'll have that all covered at our website, thefirstserve.com.au, whether you're following us Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. We've got it all covered. Alex de Minaur, early hours of tomorrow, Dusan Lajovic, Ila Tomljanovic to take on my favourite, Camilla Giorgi. That'll be an entertaining affair. And there's Aussies on the Challenger Tour, the ITF Tour galore. So we'll keep you right across that for those that follow us right throughout the course of the week. If you want to know a result, come to the First Serve. Well, we're going to circle back to UTR. We've been discussing it for quite some time on the program. We spent a good chunk of weeks talking about UTR, a rating system that provides a single unifying language and standard for tennis players across ages, geography, gender, and economics, calculated by an algorithm using a player's last 30 match results, eligible match results from the last 12 months. Now, Tennis Australia has made the UTR rating the official rating for tennis in this country, from players just starting out all the way up to the pros. The quote at the time will be easier than ever for all Aussie players to find level base play and enhance their tennis experience. Now, back on the 21st of February, we had Tennis Australia Chief Tennis Officer Tom Lana on the show. From January 1 this year, the UTR rating has been introduced across all forms of competitive play here in Australia. This was Tom back in February.
UTR has been in Australia for a number of years now. Obviously, you know, we with the COVID and the impacts of the borders, we've been using UTR as a tool for both entries and seedings across Australia with the restriction of access to ranking points. But over the last year or two, we've undertaken a review of our competitive pathways and looked at some of the challenges we knew we had within the tour, challenges around, you know, access to ranking points, the cost associated with that, challenges around level-based play, challenges around a lack of flexibility of formats, behaviour, and a really difficult-to-understand pathway. And so off the back of that review, and that review encaptured, you know, over 4,000 or 5,000 people who contributed to that, coaches, players, parents. We spoke to Australian top players. We looked at overseas models. And through the back of that, we really had a couple of key messages come really through loudly and clearly that drove us down the path of a rating tool. And they were around, you know, trying to create more local opportunities, trying to move away from a ranking and a rating tool to a simple single measure where we could measure someone's ability, and looking at simplified pathways, trying to make it easy as possible and really deregulate the tournament markets to open up to different formats as well. So as we went through that process, the UTR, I don't think there's too much dispute around the accuracy of a UTR as compared to a ranking system. You know, we know what it takes into account. We've seen some of the data that's come even out of the tour in relation to expected results on a UTR based on as compared to a ranking. And we know that's even the case in Australia as well, based on obviously access to ranking points for players. So as part of that process, you know, we've looked at bringing in the UTR as part of our tournament, our competition pathway, not just tournaments, not just events,
yep,
but also all forms of comp, whether that's, you know, weekly competition, and really getting to the point where every match counts, every match that's on that UTR system flows through to a player's rating.
So that was Tom Lana, Chief Tennis Officer at Tennis Australia, on our program back in February. For those that follow us and certainly listen in regularly, know that we followed up with discussion with players, coaches, administrators. We had some parents' feedback as well over the past few months. So further down the track, 5 months into UTR being rolled out here in Australia, we thought we'd circle back to Tennis Australia. It's great to have the Director of Pathways and Game Development, Lawrence Robinson, in the studio. He's been a guest many times in a previous role on the phone, but great to have you, Lawrence, in the studio.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Brett. Nice to be here in person. Usually been on the phone in the past, but yeah, nice to see you face-to-face.
Bit to pull apart. It's a topic, probably the hottest topic, isn't it, right now? You've come from being the CEO of Tennis New South Wales into this role at Tennis Australia pretty much at the sort of start of this year, if you like.
Yeah.
And UTR has got a lot of commentary. So, you know, we speak to, you know, obviously a full range of people across tennis who are, and I always say this, who are at the real coalface, because I'm not at that absolute coalface at club level, association level. I'm not inside the four walls of Tennis Australia. So we open up the discussion. There's a little thing that I wrote down today, because there can be sometimes, you know, negativity that comes out and some criticism, but it's about having a good constructive conversation. And you guys are aware of a lot of the feedback coming in. But I thought this sort of just summed up a lot of the feedback I've got. And I don't know whether it's totally accurate, Lawrence, so I bow to you tonight. So I believe UTR is a great system and see the benefits when used in the right setting, club and localised competition, and the background of a ranking system. The issue is when used as the sole ranking system at the performance level, the levers of UTR in many instances are counter to the core values of player development, competitive sport, and incentivising players to play as much as possible. So that's common. I've spoken to some players, coaches who like it at that younger level, not so much at the performance level. What's the feedback that's been coming into Tennis Australia 5 months down the track, predominantly?
So yeah, you're right. I mean, firstly, thanks for giving us the chance to come in and have the conversation this evening. And, you know, it was good to reflect on what Tom, you know, spoke to and mentioned, you know, back in January, I think it was, or February, when, you know, when we sort of initially rolled out. So we're 5 months in, and we've had sort of really two major tournament swings to look at. So we obviously had our, you know, let's call it our January or summer holidays, and then traditionally the Easter swing, and certainly From the from what we've observed over the course of Easter, there's still areas where I think we want to be able to dig in a little bit further and understand. We've listened and looked at some of the data. I think the first thing people are saying is, well, numbers are dropping completely. Well, that's not the case. That's certainly not what we're seeing. So the actual number of people who have been competing has remained consistent. The actual number of opportunities for them to compete has actually gone up about 35 to 37%. So as we said, we wanted to liberate the calendar. So now you can play various different competitive opportunities, whereas in the past, we had a ranking system which really served 6,000 players. There were 6,000 ranked players in Australia.
Yep.
We now have, there's over 80,000 people that have a rating profile in Australia. And when we did the review, we wanted to put in place a system that catered for players of all ages and abilities. Now, your reader or your listener is saying, look, there's benefits here, but from a performance perspective, how might we use this? Now, obviously, a rating can generate a ranking. But at the same time, what we are looking at is all the data that we've seen during the course of some of the recent performance events, 12s and 14s, nationals, the recent Mornington events, and we've looked at UTR globally and so on and so forth.
Yep.
There's some consistent patterns that come through. And when you talk about motivation, I can't talk to why a 12 or 13-year-old kid wants to get on the court. But first and foremost, we hope they're getting on court because they love playing the game. That's the first thing you want. And then secondly, you want them to look at ways in which they can progress. We actually believe that the rating can provide that.
So when you say the numbers haven't dropped, so a lot of the feedback I've been getting is probably predominantly around regional country tennis, whether it be here in Victoria or New South Wales, where you spent a fair bit of time, that they seem really
agitated.
Frustrated, very agitated, that once upon a time their great events were getting a huge roll-up, and now there's no incentive for some of the metro kids to come and play these really good regional country tennis events because they don't want their UTR affected. I mean, have you received that feedback more regionally than metro?
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, let me clarify, the number of players that are playing hasn't dropped because there's more events than the entries.
Yep.
So the number of entries in some of our events have dropped. And so, we've gone up about 30% in terms of the number of competitive opportunities because, say in the past, the ranking system sort of dictated you go there, you go there, you go there. We're now saying, look, you can choose your competitive experience. Our league participation in certain states are up, so pennant, badge, all those things. We're seeing, a return to some of that club competition, which was a lot of what we heard. But you're right, in terms of regional tennis, we are seeing in some states, and in particular New South Wales, and I'm on a flight tomorrow to spend some time with Darren and Jazz up there because we want to dig into this, right? Because you're right, they're the fabric of our sport in, in regional. But, at the same time, I've read that, the place is, there's been nobody going. And we've got, numbers from, from Easter and, Swan Hill, over 250 entries. The event in Mornington, 210 entries. Mildura had 140 entries. Country Week, as we know, people are playing competitive tennis. Might not be the ranking system, but they're playing competitive tennis. You were up there. There was over 1,000 people playing Warrnambool. And then in Queensland, again, a great tournament state. Their numbers were up, their entries were up during Easter. So the interesting thing is we're hearing some of this stuff and then you kind of start to look at some of the numbers and it doesn't necessarily play out across the country. But the regional piece, we're aware that we probably need to go and take a look at that in a bit more detail.
So there's a lot of questions I have here.
Sure,
these,
sure.
These are from people who have corresponded with us on our social media channel. So I want to get to as many as we possibly can. But I suppose just before I do that, what you rolled out and what you planned for over a period of time, and there were, 4,000 to 5,000 people surveyed, you come to those conclusions. So now 5 months down the track, what do you think are the things that just need to be tinkered with and changed possibly that are staring at you in the face now that you've seen it rolled out?
Yeah. Look, the first thing I'd say, and Craig says this a lot, the pain of change is greater than the pain of losing, right? So this is probably the single biggest shift in our domestic tennis landscape in well over a decade. So we're 5 months in. So if I can for a second, let's talk to some of the positives. We are seeing at that lower participation level, the feedback is, hey, we like the different formats. The kids are getting more matches. There's more level-based play. There's some positives in that space for sure. where we're seeing some of the feedback and potentially some of the challenges that have come out of the first 5 months, probably in two areas. Firstly, from a player perspective, we're seeing what we deem behavior, motivation, or incentive. So I'm not going to play. I'm not going to play a ratings event because I'm worried if I lose, my rating's going to drop. So I can talk a little bit to that in a second. I'm not. There's no incentive for me to play because I was, you know, earning ranking points, but now I'm not moving quick enough. Or what am I playing? Where should I play? What are the events that I play? So we've got to go and do a better job of educating the coaches, the parents, and the players to that point. And I can come back to speak to that. And then on the tournament side of things, in terms of those that are delivering the tournaments, there's probably two or three things that we're hearing. There's the withdrawal issue, right? Mm. And we're well aware of that. And again, I can touch on that. So we're struggling to understand why a kid or a player would commit to a tournament and then say, hey, they're walking off. Now, we're hearing it's because they want to protect their rating. But I can show you as much data as you... Walking off court ultimately is not going to improve you as a tennis player, and actually it's going to have very negligible impact on your rating. So we're seeing the withdrawal issues. We're then seeing the regional piece that we've got to go and dig into, and then we're hearing a little bit around the rating bands and the 2-point differential and so on and so forth. So, you know, how might we tweak some of the delivery or some of the formats that can accommodate that?
So suppose what is the interesting thing as an outsider looking in is that TA, who are, you know, invested into UTR, it's a partnership, are using it as a rating and a ranking, effectively, which is not being seen anywhere from my information around the world. So what did it come to that conclusion that it would be both?
Well, look, it's a rating. It's a rating tool in the first instance. So it's an indicator of someone's ability. Now, yep. With anything, you know, we just had a conversation about Carlos Alcaraz. So he's ATP rank number six in the world after yesterday. He's now moved up to three and he's trending towards number one. So you can use data in a variety of ways. But again, you know, as I say, we looked at the 12s and the 14s. So 28 of our 32 seeded players for the 12s and 14s nationals were accurately predicted by the UTR. 83% of our matches at the nationals were accurately predicted by the UTR. So the accuracy, as people have said, is not discounted. Then the question is, how do we use this in building a tournament calendar? And I think that's some of what we're going to go and, you know, spend some time with our member associations around. Have we put too many, you know, is there too many events on the calendar? Mm. The simplified pathway we spoke to, you play locally. Then you might want to, hey, look, I'm good enough to play, you know, a larger, you know, regional event or championships. Then I might be good enough to qualify for the state championships.
Yep.
Then I get qualified for state squad selections. The rating system is a fairer system than what we saw previously in the rankings. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think people at the moment they're just being thrown off by the fact that we've kind of moved the goalposts a little bit, and particularly for those 10s, 12s, 14s on the pathway, they're kind of thinking, what does this mean for me now? But no one's been disadvantaged.
We're going to slip in a break and we're going to come back and get into the questions that I've got from a lot of our tennis fans, those that involved at the Coalface coming up next. All thanks to Hume Tennis and Community Centre. It's a mini Melbourne Park. It's out in Craigieburn. Melbourne's north. Tim and the team do a great job. It's got tennis for everyone. Perfect also for coaches, players. If you're actually coming from interstate, very close to Melbourne Airport, you can compete, you can train. There's accommodation around the corner. Find out more at humetennis.com.au. More of Lawrence Robinson next on The First Serve.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to The First Serve. Great to have your company on this Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair. Lawrence Robinson is with me in the studio. Tennis Australia Director of Pathways and Game Development. We're going to get to a few questions around UTR. There's just one off the text here, Lawrence, before we get to Andrew. How does a top national 14-year-old have his UTR go up when he has only won 25% of matches since December and lost most of those with uncompetitive sets, is a question that just came in.
Look, Brett, I mean, I can't get into talking about specifics because I haven't had a chance to look at everybody's individual UTR and all their individual results. But I think what I can say to you is, again, I say we've looked at all the data from the 12s and 14s clay court nationals, and then we look at, you know, let's say the UTR 14s globally. There's some pretty consistent themes that come through from those. So we look at, you know, just the 12s and boys this year, so the top eight players, they've played an average of 84 matches in the last 12 months. So they're committing to playing. They're committing to competing. They are playing both up and down. So again, this is one of the things that we've heard going around, which is your rating can't go up unless you play up. I can show you, you know, graphs here of the boys and girls that competed at the Nationals. And there's a steady line going up. They're playing up, they're playing down. The consistent themes are they're playing regularly, so they're playing at least one competitive match a week, so an average 50 competitive matches in a year.
Yep.
And they're winning on average between 65 to 75% of their matches. So they've got a better win-to-loss ratio. It's a pretty simple formula. Play often, compete, win more than you lose. You're going to get better, your rating will go up.
Okay, thanks for your text. Andrew in Bathurst has given us a call, 1-300-736-736. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
What do you got for us?
I just got a quick question to Lawrence. I know Lawrence quite well. So just one mention there. You talked about the tournaments over the two key periods in the holiday sections for UTRs. You only mentioned a number of tournaments in Victoria and one or two in Queensland where they were up, but New South Wales, the numbers were drastically low, 50 to 70% lower right across the board. And then also tournaments in Victoria were also folding. Why weren't they addressed in that question?
Hi, Andrew. How are you doing? Good to hear from you again. And look, I know this is something that's, Andrew's very passionate about, and Bathurst has been a huge supporter of the ranking system for many years. So, look, we're well aware of the challenge that has emerged in New South Wales. You know, that being said, again, it's not a complete car crash. We had Albury. There was 175 entries there. Tweed Heads, 175. And one of the things that the team have done in New South Wales is the introduction of the regional match play series has meant that over sort of February and March, there are events that have counted towards players' ratings, and they had over 1,000 entries, you know, in that duration. But Andrew's right. I mean, there are some events that have had their entries down. There are more events in New South Wales, considerably more events. There are more opportunities to play. So, the choice is with the player now. And to Andrew's point, it's like, what are we going to do to address that issue? That's why I'm flying up tomorrow and have that conversation with Jazz and Darren and the team in New South Wales, because we see how critical, you know, players travelling and attending, you know, regional events are to the tennis ecosystem in those parts of the world. All I'm saying is that it's not completely desolate. There are people travelling in Queensland to play regionally. People have travelled in Victoria. People have travelled in New South Wales, perhaps not in the same numbers, but we've got to go away and look at that and think, is that how they've built the calendar? Is it how we potentially incentivize players to play other events? So I'm not glossing over it. We're well aware of the issue.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm going to get to a few of these questions, Lawrence, as many as we possibly can. So these are what came in. Any plans to address the drop-in juniors playing tournaments and kids paying $65 for two matches to win a tournament?
So look, we've spoken to the drop-in numbers, and so in terms of entries, so overall, the number of players competing has not dropped. So we've seen the same number of people competing. In terms of the number of entries overall nationally, they're down about 11%. The actual entries are, but again, what we've seen is there are more opportunities for them to play in other areas. What we're hearing is, players don't want to play because they want to protect the rating. And as we've said, that actually is not going to help anybody in the long term. If you want to get better as any tennis player or any sportsman or woman, sorry, if you want to get on the court, you're going to get better by playing more. So we are, we can show all of the information to say, get out, compete regularly, and you will see your rating improve if you're winning more matches than you're losing.
Doug says, is Tennis Australia concerned with the lack of entries in doubles? Doubles draws have been decimated with the introduction of UTR. Under the previous ranking system, valuable points were up for grabs in doubles. As doubles results have no impact on your singles UTR rating, tournament numbers have dropped significantly.
I think that's a fair question, a fair comment as well. And I think, the review did say, look, we wanted to look at finding the right balance between tournament play and competition, or what we call pennant play or club competition. So we're hopeful that as people have a choice to play both, they'll get their doubles experience by playing club pennant or state league in some of our other states. But yeah, I think we should take a look at how we might incentivise players to continue to play in the doubles in the various tournaments that we're hosting.
Okay. Andrew says, is TA concerned that the banding of UTR grades in tournaments makes moving up and down on the UTR scale difficult?
I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I think we've spoken to this. The moving up and down, this notion that you can only improve your rating by playing players above you, is actually not the case. Yeah, you know, as I say, the 12s national champion, if I could just, 12s national champion, since December, he's played 48 matches. He played 25 matches of opponents who are rated above him, and he played 23 matches of players who are rated below him, and his rating's gone up by nearly 1 point. So he's played a lot of tennis, and that's what we're seeing consistently. Now, do we need to go out and tell that story or get that information into? Absolutely. We've got to do a better job of that. But that's what I'd say is it's compete and win your matches.
From what you said, I probably know the answer here, but is TA considering reverting back to a rankings points system?
Well, certainly not at this stage. We're not looking at reverting back to a rankings points system. As we said before, you know, we had 6,000 players in a ranking system. We've got a rating system now that was always intended to cater for players of all ages and abilities. And whilst the conversation right now is focused on those who were in the ranking system, and particularly those 12s to 16s who are the aspirational players, when you actually go out and start to talk to Clubland, and I was with a number of associations with Tennis Victoria on the weekend, how they're using it to run their midweek comps and Saturday comps and pennant, you know, no longer are they grading and pen and paper and whatever. They can actually make use of this at the grassroots, right? Mm. So this was never intended to be just for a small cohort. This was always intended to be for everyone who wants to play competitively. And the vision for us is 5 years down the track, we've got 150, 200,000 people. And you and I can easily say, hey, what's your rating? Well, I'm a six. Hey, I'm a six as well. We're going to have a good match.
Yep.
That's the long-term vision. We're just going through the let's call it the pain period as we roll this out.
A question in here, I'm going to jump a few, try and get to as many, because we've sort of covered a few of the topics with our questions. What penalties would be imposed to actually stop withdrawals? Example, like, you know, 3 retirements and you get a 6-month suspension. That was just a question that sort of came in, because we were talking about, obviously, withdrawals, maybe not as many entries at some of these tournaments with people just focused on protecting their UTR.
Yeah, well, firstly, protecting your rating is not something we'd advocate, and we're hoping many of our coaches are not advocating our kids not playing or anyone not playing. In terms of the withdrawal, so look, there's a process, and this is where sometimes people get frustrated with, you know, the Federation. But we are proposing a change that has to go to the board. The board has to approve it. It then flows down through the code of behaviour. But look, we are looking at really 2 critical changes. One would be if you withdraw prior to an event starting, there's 1 level of penalty. And if you withdraw during event, that would be probably a double penalty. And the reason being is the minute you withdraw, one, no respect for anybody on the other side of the net, and you know what happens to the draws after that. It does cause chaos. And that's why we've been having some, you know, challenges with our tournament deliverers.
Let's slip in our last break. We'll come back and round out the questions for Lawrence Robertson in the studio, Melbourne's leading synthetic grass court surface and construction specialist, always on board with us. ASTE Tennis Courts, here trusted by Melbourne Tennis Clubs and Councils. Check them out, aste.com.au.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management. And glgcorp.com, the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to the First Serve, racing through a Monday night as always. Need a good tennis lesson? Go and see Shane Scrutton at Yarra Tennis Coaching out there at beautiful Eaglemont, just off the Eastern Freeway. If you're a beginner, if you're a bit more experienced, his mission is simply to improve your game. Over 30 years coaching Shane and his team out there. Beautiful setting. Check out yarratennis.com.au. Lawrence Robinson is in the studio, of course, Director of Pathways and Game Development at Tennis Australia, UTR. We've been discussing that tonight. Obviously, we've spoken about it quite a bit this year. I'm going to get to a few more comments. In fact, I think there's one quickly here. Nick from Ivanhoe on the text. The tournament play, too many matches in one day. 4 matches in one day is not attractive. Tennis is a very long day compared to games of 3 hours of football. That's just a comment from Nick.
yeah, we on the text.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can necessarily get away from that. I don't think we're in a situation where we want to see anyone playing four matches in one day. And I think we would be looking at ways in which we can limit that. But that's our sport, and it poses definite challenges for us, particularly with our officiating community, which is an area now that I'm responsible for. And they've regularly told us these are long days, and that's also something we want to try and address.
Without the coach's support, the performance participants, parents and players won't get on board. Talk about that coach space. There has been a coach review that's been going on for quite some time. I suppose that the coach's role in all this, in trying to work with the players around this UTR?
Yeah, look, I can't speak to the wider review, and obviously Adam Carey's recently joined the team from Queensland, and like Adam is sort of ready to sort of roll out a number of elements in that regard. We absolutely agree that the coach role, and again it was called out in the review, they're pretty critical in helping the player understand what does it mean to compete and the essence of that. And I think there is definitely concern I'm not an Aussie, but we always would look from afar at the nation, the notion of Australian competitiveness. They love to compete.
Yep.
We need to be able to work with the coaches to help educate the parents, the players, as to the benefits of the rating system, debunk some of the myths that are out there. But again, fundamentally, how can we get you on the court and get you working on your game and developing your game?
I think you've already said this a few times, that this is a comment that came in. TA need to educate the performance community on what affects UTR in development years has on their realistic destination. So I suppose people are probably just crying out for a little bit more discussion and feedback and how it's all going to be implemented long term. A couple more on the text. One from Michelle. My 11-year-old and 13-year-old partner had to play two 16-year-olds in a recent country comp thanks to UTR. It was a straight sets drubbing. So just the difference in ages.
Yeah, look, we've heard a bit of this. The rating system, once you get to around about 14, you start to see a bit of separation. We think at the under 14 space, the rating can drive, good level-based play as part of the, as a sort of, let's say, a genderless competitive opportunity. Beyond that, look, in an ideal world, we don't necessarily want to see 25-year-olds playing 16-year-olds. However, I will say that many of the greats that came up through the ranking system, or the old system, not the ranking system, but came up through the system, they played club tennis. And when they were good enough, they were playing Division One. They were thrown in, whether they were 12, 13, 14. Many of them played that. So we've had many years where that's how they developed their game. They learned their court craft, as you say, by playing players who are a bit older. But we don't necessarily want to see that sort of time and time again.
I've got plenty more, but we're going to run out of time, as we always do on this show. What I'm going to do, I might handball some of that correspondence onto you. And
absolutely.
You can digest that and pick it apart. And I think it's an ongoing discussion. We've got a long year. It's only May. We go right through to November. I think we continue to revisit it, keep the conversation going. Plenty of people passionate about tennis, not only the governing body, people out there at the coalface of the game. I think we all have one aim, and that's to see tennis thriving in this country. How we get to that destination, we need everyone to come together and right. There's plenty to do in that space.
Absolutely. Brett, thanks again for the opportunity. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Lawrence. Lawrence Robinson, of course, Director of Pathways and Game Development. Keep an eye on our website, thefirstserve.com.au, all our dedicated podcasts, as well as our Monday night show. We've got Aussies Only, Crunching the Numbers, Play USA. What are you doing here with Rowan Williams? The Grind is coming up soon. We'll talk to you next Monday. Hit them beautifully, out of the middle of the strings, if you don't mind, and we'll do it again next Monday.